May 4th, we're entering Shmos Lamed Gimel. This is our sixth question. What does it mean to see God's face or back? All right, just very briefly, is that if God doesn't have a face that man can see, how does he have a back that man can see? Why doesn't seeing God's back kill him? Right? So we already have in the Rishonim, but it's really so beautifully described by Rav Soloveitchik in his first book, Reflections of the Rav. There's one chapter on this. Just that it should be obvious. Seeing God's face will overtax the human capacity of understanding, that it'll affect other functions the brain has to have to just keep us alive. Right? So, seeing God's face means that we get the picture, so to say, that Eov wanted to have. No secret that Eov is written by Moshe. In fact, it was at this point that we skipped to Eov, if you recall, and then we went back. Right? So it's to receive the information in retrospect. In other words, I don't get it directly. Getting it directly is going to, really, you're going to understand now why the things in Yirmiyahu happened? Yeah, you can, because it's safely 2,500 years later. Right? But I don't know if we have the right, within living memory of some Holocaust survivors, to give reflection of what happened there. Or explanation, or why. It's okay to learn some lessons of the Holocaust. Right? Okay, so seeing God's back means what Eov is. That the end of the book of Eov puts things into relief for him. Everything is returned to him. Right? You will endure torture if you feel that you'll survive it. But Eov, throughout the book, doesn't know how it's going to end. It's nice that it ends that way, isn't it? But what happens when a person doesn't end that way? Right? Well, what Eov's experience at the end of the book can be our experience. That there is a mighty power out there that is so far, such a chasm between that mind and our mind, that does not necessarily answer the questions, because again, those questions will overtax us and we die. What am I saying? This because when Eov finally asks for his day in court at the end of the book, Hashem doesn't tell him a single personal thing about his struggles and what made all this happen back in chapter 1 and 2. Instead, God shows him the great chasm between himself and man. And then Eov is okay, all right, I see what's on your plate, God. I see some of it. I don't have a right to ask. Yeah, that's right. Moshe seeing God's back is trying to say, okay, you know what? It's chapter 12. I think there's going to be a chapter 39 and a chapter 40 where I think that there will be an answer sometime. If I were Moshe and asking for Moshe does challenge God a lot in the Torah. First time he goes to Egypt and he doesn't succeed. He runs back to God and he's a lot of chutzpah there. From the time I came, things got worse. More people are dead because of me. I saw a man with 5 children who was beaten to death because he didn't come up with enough straw. And that straw last week was given to him before I came. What are you making me here? Why do I have to be a leader like this? Right? So the Mefarshim say, Moshe, God told you it's going to get worse before it gets better. What's your beef? He goes, my beef is not with God's plan. I understand God has a plan. My beef is that the people are not understanding this as part of your plan. I have not made a chil Hashem, a kiddush Hashem. I've made a chil Hashem. They're not saying that this is happening because it's part of your plan. They're saying this is happening because of my inadequacy, and that's what I've told you at the bush. Choose someone else. Take Aaron. All right, so Moshe knows how to challenge God. He knows how to press God. Right?
Did Moshe ask to see God's face in the beginning of the Midbar or the end?
The beginning of the 40 years. So I might think that Moshe might have a little cut, say, God, cut me a little slack. My sister just died. I meant well. I was really in a bad way. Don't you have any mercy for an onen, someone that my sister just died, mamish, right before. You know, Hashem says, okay, listen, you know, I'm pretty precise with the people who get close to me. Remember Nadav and Avihu? Right? Okay, so that answers that question. Vayikra 26 and Devarim 28, which is why is reward and punishment stated solely in materialistic terms in the Tanakh, in the Chumash, when our rabbis say schar mitzvah b'hayal malekah, there's no reward for mitzvahs in this world. What? that's the only way the Torah seems to express it. There's no pasuk in the Torah that says live the good life, even if you're suffering, because there is an eternal soul in your body that will derive immeasurable benefits that go beyond anything you see in this world if you live the good life. Now that's what we're taught, no? So why wasn't there a pasuk like that in the Torah?
The Rambam says that it was too hard for who read it, right, to understand it. That Ezra said that they knew about...
They were so steeped in it, they didn't have to tell them. It was obvious. They read it between the lines. The Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin that tells us how we know about the eternal existence of our inner being says it's hinted all over the Torah, many places. It's just that it's not clear. Now, the fact is, in Nevi'im, Yeshayahu, Yechezkel, Daniel, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, there are explicit references to the immutable nature of the soul. This is what I say, you know, at the burial of a loved one. I say, we're not burying your grandmother today. We're burying the body that her soul used to inhabit. Her soul continues to exist. You hear? We're just burying a body that the soul used to inhabit. The soul will always be with you. That soul will tap you on the shoulder sometime. And you'll feel it. And that can't be taken from you. Whether that's consolation or not, I don't want to tap the soul. I want to have my grandmother here. I want to have her advice. I want to have her hand to hold. I want to have her to go shopping with. I want her... Right? Okay. You know, the ancient pagan was consumed with that issue. That was his main occupation, was to try to resolve the mystery of death. That's why this week's Parsha, Parsha's Kedoshim, obsesses so much about seances. Kedoshim has 64 psukim, 63 mitzvahs. That's a lot, large concentration of mitzvahs, right? Three times in Parshas Kedoshim it says, do not call back the dead. And it's the death penalty. Things that the ancient pagan is doing, they is doing all the time, is not only prohibited, but prohibited on the pain of death in the Torah. It's really so far l'hafriz min amida in the Torah against, different than the ways of the ancients. Right?
Didn't somebody do that though?
Yeah, at the end of Shmuel Aleph, most rationalist Perushim, most of the Sephardi Perushim, explained that it was bogus. It was someone under the table making Shaul think that he saw it, or that Shaul himself, you know, she hypnotized him, which can be done, or that it was God that did it. That's why she was so surprised. She didn't do it. No human being has the power to bring back another human being. Right? So, but even after twice, Parshas Kedoshim mentions the seance. Then it sort of wraps up the whole Parsha, right? At the end, it wraps up the Parsha beautifully. It wraps up all of Vayikra beautifully. It says, I have chosen you as my holy nation. You are holy because I'm holy. I have chosen you to differentiate between the pure and the impure, between the holy and the profane, between the kosher and the unkosher, to be my holy people. Because I am holy. Beautiful way to end Parshas Kedoshim, right? You ever see the last pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim after that? But it don't hold a seance. If you hold a seance, I will have you killed. please follow on Shabbos and you'll see. And you're going to say, why? Why end the parsha this way? And by the way, how does next week's parsha begin? Emor. What's the first halacha in Emor? What's the first law of Kehuna? Just read this. Purity. What kind of purity? Death defilement. You cannot go to a funeral except from your immediate family. The nefesh lo yitzam abamav. Why? Why is it so that our religious functionaries must stay far away from death defilement? Just now you know, because just to be different than the ancient pagan, they're consumed with death and death defilement and holding bones in your mouth and under your arms in order to communicate with the dead person I just killed. Or I drink their blood. That's why it says lo tochlu in this parsha. It doesn't say lo tochlu dam. What's the lashon in the parsha? Lo tochlu al hadam. Mazeh. Lo tochlu dam. Don't eat blood. Right? Mazeh lo tochlu al hadam. So Ramban writes in his parish. I know the ancient pagan used to sit around in a circle, 30 people in a circle. They choose one of them to be killed, right? Whoever it fell on, right? That person would willingly go to his death. He's about to meet his eternal, whatever else he's looking forward to. And he's going to communicate with the other 29 people around the room as they drink his blood. Sound fun? Sound like fun? And he's going to tell them all about the secrets of that part of the universe. Right? And we'll see you soon. Okay, the Torah says it's bogus. It doesn't exist. It's not real. Don't do it. And don't drink the blood either. Right, there are other reasons for avoiding blood in the Torah, admittedly. But this, you see it? You get it? So how do we atone, or I shouldn't say atone, but purify death defilement is with a mitzvah that defies logic. It's not supposed to make sense to you because death is not supposed to make sense to you. Don't try to resolve it. Don't try to avoid it. Avoid it with good health, living a good life. Chai b'hem, but don't do what they do. Right? Okay. So this is the materialistic terms of reward and punishment is not what's certainly going to happen to you. That's how Chazal understood it. Schar mitzvah b'hayal malecha, because we see kids climbing up ladders that guarantee long life and then listen to their fathers telling them to do so, and then they die immediately. What is it? Torah is not a guarantee for your benefit and your pleasure. Torah is telling you what will usually work, what will most often work. Remember I compared it to stopping for the red light, don't cross the street when the light is red. What does the parent tell his child what will happen if he does that?
Don't get hit by a car.
The car will hit you. So the child thinks, no, my father's a liar. The car didn't hit me. I crossed many times. The car didn't hit me. And you make all your whole entire lifetime crossing at the wrong time and never getting hit by a car. That's very possible. Right? But that's just the way people are going to tell you. Don't cross at the red because you will get hit, not you may get hit. When the Torah says, if you do this in Parshas Ki Savo, these terrible things will happen to you. Right? The Holocaust, they all happened. But in other words, I don't want those things to happen. But at some point, they're waiting to happen to you if you continue this way. Right?
That's true.
If you smoke two packs a day, what's the surprise if something happens to you that correlates to that? But some people can smoke two packs a day and nothing happens to them. And another person is raised in the country, far away from any pollution, and he gets lung cancer. I know such a person, actually. Died of lung cancer growing up in the country. And when they told him, he says, there's no rational explanation, it's just a mutation. Now, by the way, it's just a devastating scientific study. 75% of cancers are random. Did you see this? It's a recent study just came out. In other words, they can't be predicted by your behavior. See anything on that?
How many percent of smokers get cancer?
No, you can by all means, by certain behaviors, enhance your likelihood. You know, you don't eat right. You know, certain cancers are much higher than others. Anything coming up there, Gideon? No. mutations here, random cancer genes. And all right, so it's a little debilitating, you know. Maybe that's what Eov is. In other words, Hashem put it into our DNA. Why? You should just put good things in our DNA. No, because he put those things in our DNA, so hopefully at some point in our... We're still very early in human existence, I imagine. We're working on it. We just came up with penicillin, for goodness sakes. Give us some time. And I bet that answer is going to come out of Israel. Even with all the boycotts and you know. It's coming. We're getting to it. One by one. We're working on it. Right? 100 years ago, most Americans died of complication of tooth decay. That was the most common cause of death. All right. Okay. So that's the explanation.
When you're writing, it will happen. Is that true of your own or for mitzvah also? Like, it will happen for Avera, you're saying?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen all the time.
Mitzvah too, of course. I mean, on this score, I don't mind putting on tefillin every morning and say, God, I expect something good from you because I'm putting on tefillin. And every other mitzvah I do, I'm not going to demand it. In fact, I'm doing it on the condition that you do good things for me. I'm a servant of yours, and I am alive to perform your will. And I expect that would lead to good things for me and the people around me and my loved ones and the people I care about. I expect it. In fact, it's conditional on it. So there's a Gemara, and there's four Gemaras, Baba Basra, Pesachim, Rosh Hashanah, and Tainis, where this appears. To Hanosein, Tzedakah, Almanas, She'eyeh ben Olam Haba, Almanas, She'yichyeh b'ni, Almanas, anything. Almanas, when I asked this girl to marry me, she says, yes, Harezet Tzadik Gomor, Harezet Tzedakah Gomor. So Tosfos asks, it says, Al Tu Kavodim, Amisham, Shnitzarav, Almanas, L'Kabal Pras. Right? Our question right here. Right? Don't serve the master and expecting reward. So I might have thought it's a din in Tzedakah. Because tzedakah is such a beautiful mitzvah that when it comes to tzedakah, based on the Gemara in Maseches Tainis that talks about, remember, uvachanuni na bezos, test me and challenge me, that if you give your miser properly, I'll open up the heavens and give you so much rain, ad beli die, until you say, enough, enough, too much rain. Right? You hear it? So it's a din in tzedakah. No, Tosfos doesn't give that answer. That's the answer I would have given. Tosfos says, no, it's a din in all the mitzvahs. The difference is that if you put a $100 bill in the tzedakah box and say, God, this is on condition that this woman says yes when I ask her to marry me. And then she says no. You go back to the tzedakah box and take your $100 back. That's the violation of that mitzvah, that mission in Pirkei Avos. You didn't keep your side, God. I'm not keeping mine. I'm taking my money back. It's revolutionary. I mean, whoever's thought that this is the pshat in the mission, what's wrong? What's wrong with saying, God, you tell me to keep Taras Mishpacha, and I expect good things because of that, not only of my relationship with my wife, but for everything I do. Okay, next. Why did God command sending scouts knowing how disastrous it would turn out? All right, that's a question in anything. Why did God create the world only to destroy it?
Free will of God doesn't stop any use. Let the world play out and whatever happens.
Right. So on this, I would just tell you, whenever a question like this happens in a story, in a narrative, so you have to go through the whole narrative. We didn't do that in this class, thoroughly, but in Devarim, the decision to send scouts, I don't like to call them spies, the decision to send scouts comes from the people. In Bamidbar it says, and God commanded Moshe send scouts, right? Which one is it? All the Mefarshim Tishlach deal with this. So Rashi says it started with the people. People said, listen, we're going across, we're going to cross this Yarden, we're going to see. We should have a picture of what's going on there. Right? So Moshe took that request to God, said, God, what do you think about this? So God says, all right, Shlach Lecha Anoshim, if you think it's a good idea, I'm not inclined. I don't think it's necessary. I told you it's Neretz Avas Chalav Devash. All right. Again, the Rav says something so beautiful about this. He says that You ever hear of the drash Laman Nismacha Parshas Meraglim Lashon Hara Shel Miriam? Right, Miriam speaks Lashon Hara, becomes leprous. They wait 7 days for her, and then they move on. And the next story is Shlach Lecha Anoshim. What's that? Right, Yikuz HaAlila. Why are these two stories put together? The answer is to teach that the Meraglim didn't learn the message of Lashon Hara by Yotziu Dibas Haaretz. They didn't learn the message of Miriam's Lashon Hara and what the debilitating effect it had, and they did the same. So Rav Soloveitchik says, I have to read into that. What was the nature of Miriam's Lashon Hara? This is our next class. What was the nature of her Lashon Hara? What was her Lashon Hara? Correct. But why is that Lashon Hara? Maybe she wants to help him. So her Lashon Hara is Ha'ach Rakbash, but Moshe Diber Hashem? Does God only talk to him? What's the implication of that? Yeah, we talk Lashon Hara. We talk to God too. You and I are prophets to our own. We maintain regular family relationships. What makes him feel he's so big? So that's why the next pasuk calls him an Anav. If Moshe wasn't such an Anav, he would have let his brother and sister. He doesn't have to tell the whole world, at least your brother and sister. You can brag a little about how close you are with God. No, he was an Anav, he doesn't need that. Right? So it was really Lashon Hara by Moshe's prophetic ability. So even Miriam, that's what an Anav Moshe was. Even his own sister failed to realize, get this, this is what Rav Soloveitchik calls it, the segula, meaning the unique characteristic, the singularity, very famously, the singularity of Moshe's prophetic ability. None will ever have that. You failed to realize it, Miriam. If you had realized it, you wouldn't have spoken this way. So too, the Meraglim failed to realize the singularity of the relationship between this nation with this land. That's why they won't teach you the 6 day war to West Point. They say there's no thing, it can't be replicated, there's no such thing. It can't happen. Right? The whole existence of Israel, where it is today, is miraculous. The relationship between the Jew and Israel is different between the relationship between an Irishman and Ireland. I mean, duh, we have 250 mitzvahs we can't do except there. So it's a religious thing, maybe. The shame is, historically, the historical shame is, that its resurgence was, its application was from people who were not only not religious, but anti-religious, mostly. Just too few people who came along from a religious standpoint. If Avraham Yitzchak Kook is, and his chevra, that's it. Right? So I once said in the drasha on the Shabbos for Yom Ha'atzmaut, We usually in a non-leap year, we read Parshas Mitzora right before Yom Ha'atzmaut. Always. We just had Parshas Mitzora last week. Yom Ha'atzmaut was this week, right? So what's the Haftorah of Parshas Mitzora? Where the salvation for the camp of Israel comes at the hands of these four lepers. Well, that's what's happened. We didn't deserve better. We didn't deserve better. We deserved spiritual lepers as the ones who brought back the land of Israel. That's what we got. Now it's time to wake up and say we made an historical mistake. As late as 1937, public proclamations in Germany said, even if you have the opportunity to go to America, don't. You will die a spiritual death. Things will clear up here. As late as 1940, we have letters from Rosh Yeshiva in Poland. The war had started already. It was impossible to leave there, but even if you could get across the border, there's one really devastating letter about a student who had a chance to go to YU or Skokie in Chicago. And I won't get into it now, but a famous Rebbe told him, no, you will die a spiritual death at either of those two institutions. If you stay here, I know it's dangerous, but we'll weather this storm. The author of this letter was killed in Warsaw Ghetto. So question is, you make some historical mistakes. Can we fix it? Right? It was disastrous what happened with the Meraglim, but it wasn't Moshe's fault. They turned their mission from one thing to another, and what they failed to recognize was the singularity of the land of Israel. Rav Soloveitchik explains it amazingly in halachic terms. When you marry someone, what does the Gemara say? You have to meet them first. Don't ever marry someone without meeting them. Obviously, where we court now is very different, but at that time, parents would make up a deal. I'm fine, she's my wife, good. I hope I like her. I hear they have a girl for me, I hope she's pretty. It's a line from Fiddler on the Roof, right? So we're getting married to Israel. We have to see it first. So that's why they didn't. When you send spies, that's why I don't like to call them Meraglim. When you send spies, you don't publicly announce their names, right? You disavow yourselves of them if they're ever even caught, right? You're on your own. Should you choose to accept this mission, you know, right? You got it? So they're publicly announcing who they are, and you send congressmen. Congressmen are so full of themselves. Of course, I mean, it's not Moshe's fault, because if Moshe had sent them on a spy mission, then that would be Moshe's fault. Moshe sent them on a scouting mission, a tour at Eretz. Bring back some information that might help some, you know, some about the conquest of the land, but it's mostly just an information mission. What does the Kala look like? What's she like? So, God, you know, knowing the disaster, says, you know what, human beings, you've got to learn, you got to grow up. You've got to learn your own messages here. Okay? How far can man's goal extend before God? Well, this is an easy one. When Yehoshua lost 36 men at Ai, remember? He complains bitterly to God. Really bad stuff. As bad as you get in Shmos. Remember? Mo, what does it say there? It says, why did you take us across the Yarden? Better we should die in the desert than to be taken to Israel and turn our necks against the enemy and be chased down and hunted down to be killed. Why did you take us out of Egypt? Why did you take us out of... Better you should just leave us on our own. What? What chutzpah? Moshe didn't talk to God this way. Who are you, Yehoshua? But then he redeems himself with the last few words. What shall be done? What will you do with your great name, God? We are here in Israel to sanctify your name. We heard the way Rachav talked about what everyone's saying. But still they've hardened their hearts. So be it. Right? That's a theodicy question itself. It says that God hardened their hearts with Paro. My view is the Rambam's, I prefer it, is that no one's heart was hardened. No more than Saddam Hussein's heart was hardened in 1991, where he refused to back off what he took from Kuwait. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. We knew he wasn't going to. And it was interesting, the day of I think I told you, George Bush the first gave February 15th, 1992, I think it was by then. No, it was 1991. He went in August 1990, and it was 1991 February 1991 that they did Desert Storm, I think it was called. So it was Rosh Chodesh. I knew he announced like a month in advance, you have till February 15th to give it up, or we're coming in. February 15th was Rosh Chodesh. At the time, America had just perfected this night equipment that made everything that the America saw it to be bright like day, but you don't have the technology. You're fighting against the new moon. It's very dark. So more advantage on Rosh Chodesh. So that's why I felt he picked that day. But it was also the Shabbos that we were reading Parshas Va'era. What good sermonic material, huh? The great Pharaoh who continued to harden his heart with a great peril to himself, such stubbornness. You know, he claimed to be the second coming of Nebuchadnezzar. You know, He cut out all the... He had a lot of paintings in Bavel, like 100 paintings in Bavel of Nebuchadnezzar, some as big as this wall. Priceless paintings. He cut out all of the pictures, faces of Nebuchadnezzar and put his picture in it. His face. Any painting in the museum of Nebuchadnezzar, it's Saddam Hussein's face. Now I'm like, Mistama, I don't know. They put it back or whatever. But, right? Or they took off Saddam's face. Right? So, you know, in Sefer Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar lives in the out in the field for a few years. It says his hair grew long, his nails grew long, he had a long beard. Said you, I mean, you're too young maybe to remember when they finally caught up with him. You ever have a picture in your mind of what he looked like in that little hole, that rat hole that they found him in? Remember, he had this long beard, long hair, and he had disheveled. He looked like he became Nebuchadnezzar, just like he wanted. Strange how you never know. Okay, so that's how you can have gall, but as long as you say the purpose is God's great name, right? How far to test God? Oh boy, as far as you need. Why am I asking this question on Shoftim 6? Because when Gideon was so unsure of himself, he needed test after test after test. I want the fleece to be dry, the ground to be wet. I want the ground to be dry, the fleece to be wet. And he still wasn't sure. God said, listen, if you need more fortification, go and spy on the enemy camp and listen to what they're talking about. Right? Remember what happened? He went into the Midianite camp and he heard someone tell a dream. Right? About a roll made of barley. And the guy interpreted, oh, this must be Gideon. We've heard about this amazing warrior called Gideon. He can really turn things around for them. So Gideon was strengthened by that. And he went back up and he said, okay, I feel chazak now. Pretty amazing, huh? The answer is to test God, you know, lo tenasu es Hashem. But, you know, different people have different levels of bitachon. How far does our faith or doubt extend in the face of mortal danger? Well, ain't some chenalanes. When God told Shmuel to appoint a new king, right? So he says, if I do that, he'll kill me. So Hashem says, according to the Gemara in Yevamos, okay, if they ask you what you're doing here, tell them you're bringing a korban. According to Radak, he very much disagrees with this. Radak says, what? You're afraid of Shaul? Bring a korban. Call attention to yourself. Let's see what he can do. You'll stand. You'll be a firewall. Don't worry. You're doing what I'm telling you to do. It happened later when David escaped to Shmuel in Ramot. Shaul sent messengers to bring David to kill Shmuel. And Shmuel just stood there in a pillar of fire, like in Parshas Bishalach, and they couldn't come close. And if they tried, they started to sing in like prophetic voice. They stripped of their clothes and they started to give prophecy and they said, no, we can't do anything here, we'll go away. And it happened like 3 or 4 times to more and more people. Until Shaul himself went, and the same thing happened to Shaul. Right? Shmuel, don't worry, I've got your back. That's what Hashem told Moshe. It says, Od ba'ad uskaluni! They'll stone us in a second. Hashem said, Avor lifnei ha'am. What are you talking about? I'm not going to let them stone you. Go walk in front of them and see. Right? How far can we blame God for our problems? Well, what do you think? Is it fair for me to answer in a course like this? Well, as far as any biblical character does. Is that fair? Eliyahu blames God for all the problems. And so does Habakkuk. Can we? So I'm not a prophet. These guys were prophets. There's a lot of chutzpah going around. Here's what it's called in the Gemara. Sound familiar? In the 5th parak in Brachas. Hitiach dvarim klape mala. Moshe does, by referring to a place called Dizahav. You gave them the gold. Look what they did with it. It's your fault, God. You could be chutzpahdik for the sake of the people. Moshe's point in saying, God, you have to forgive them. What's going to happen? You take a rich kid, put a money bag around his neck, give him perfume, right? Give him nice clothes and put him right in front of a whorehouse. You don't think he's going to sin? What did you give them the gold for? I want to see if that's what makes Moshe ask to see God's face. What was the gold about? I didn't even want them to take gold out of Egypt. Just let's get out of it with our lives. I know, but I promised Avram. And he thought I meant money. I really meant the Torah, but okay. Who else would clap it? Hitiach Tvarim clap it Malachana, Eliyahu. You know, people who speak with chutzpah, according to the Gemara before God. And the Gemara seems to give them a pass. All right, these are prophets. Here's what I would say with this. Expect the best. Prepare for the worst. Demand the best. Say, God, I will not settle for anything but the best outcome here. But at the same time, I'm prepared. Does that make sense? Expect the best. I'm taking my day as unrealistic as it may be. My expectation is that this will have a good ending. But I am prepared if it doesn't. I mean, prepared for the very worst that it could be. Yirmiyahu 12, Why Do the Wicked Thrive, is really one of the most important sources on this page. Remember we learned it with the Malbim, who deftly undoes practically all the arguments of Eov's friends with just a few psukim in Yirmiyahu 12. He deftly does it with his parshanot, but it's profoundly evident for anyone who has eyes that there's some horrifically wicked people out there who have no gumption, no conscience, and they continue sinning with impunity. Just remember, one by one, Yirmiyahu undoes. This is what so far says there, and look at Yirmiyahu says it's just not true so far. Now, is so far blind? No, so far sees the world with a very black and white lens. Your suffering is a function of what you deserve. Better to say that God gives out reward and punishment justly than to think that man can be more righteous than God. Okay. Hosea 14:10 ends with a profoundly difficult theological problem. He says, the ways of God are righteous, and they're true. The righteous will walk in them and succeed, and the wicked will walk in them and stumble. Really? How could anyone stumble in the way of God? And what does it mean that a wicked man walks in the way of God? It paves a road to hell. We've heard of that saying, right? I gave a specific example of it. If Yerovam ben Nevat making the calves in order to protect from Baal worship. You're exactly wrong, Yerovam. It was not a safety net against Baal worship. It was a gateway to Baal worship. There can be no good intentions of this sort. You're walking in the way of God. Yeah, I know. You made this for Eila Elohecha Yisrael, that this is what the gods of Israel do. Right? I'm just amazed that the Bible critics who claim that this story must be before the Egel HaZahav, because if there was a story of the Egel HaZahav, no one would ever have gotten away with saying such a thing, right? Really? And all the Avodah Zarah that was worshipped until then is okay? That's going to prove that all the Avodah Zarah in Sefer Shoftim and in Sefer Melachim is proof that they didn't know about a law about Avodah Zarah? No. Jews have been violating the Torah ever since it's been written, every day. Some Jews.
This is the same thing with the conservative movement, you said, right? The conservative movement also.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we talked at length about the Shabbos. Amos 6 to 8, when he said this, sometimes maybe it's not proper to mention God. Remember the 65, the silence? We recently did that. Haski lo lazkir b'shem Hashem. Now you know what the main concern is? How to survive. To get through here. Finish this situation. Throw out all the bones, burn the bodies that are so contaminated, and try to finish this and get through and see a better day. Chavakuk 1, what weakens Torah in the eyes of man is, you know, Ura Hashem, Lama Tishan. Why don't you wake up, God? I'm sorry to say, I really sort of cheated you out of, well, I did. You see on the next page, we talk about Koelis, Mishlei Tehillim, pessimism, optimism, realism, biblical wisdom, literature. We did that in the very beginning of the course. Right? Koelis is very pessimistic. Mishlei by nature is very optimistic. Tehillim has a realistic combination. Not that every perek does, but that in the balance of all the prokim of Tehillim, you see a lot of realism. You see a lot of optimism. Hinei lo yanum v'lo yishon shomer Yisrael is a great optimistic pasuk. But if you say Tehillim by the days of the month, today's Tehillim has the pasuk in it, Ura Hashem lama tishon. Wake up, God, why are you sleeping? Can I say we go through a lot of different directions, yeah? Okay. Okay. All right, guys. Morris, go ahead. And you're going to graduate?